even in the worst case scenario that you have the ETF swallowing up, you know, 10% of the supply at some point, and suggest a fork so that everything is OFAC sanctioned and, you know, is good for the environment. I can see that happening. And if we haven't built a compelling alternate infrastructure that would allow people to live on a chain that looks a lot like it does today, we might lose that battle long term. It can't just be an ETF that's swallowing it up. We need more competition for swallowing up as much UTXO as possible. So what do I see where Fold is in 5-10 years? It is definitely the center of your financial universe built on Bitcoin. It is from your rewards down to your checking and savings and all the other things that the Bitcoin economy can do.
This podcast is entertainment, not financial, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed represent statements of the speaker in their individual capacity, do not represent the views of Unchained, and should not be considered investment advice. Speakers often have personal, family, or business connections to Unchained, which may include direct financial benefits. Please see our disclosure at unchained.com/podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Frontier podcast. This week, I have on Will Reeves. Will, welcome.
It's good to be here, Joe. Excited to get through some stuff today. What are we talking about?
Absolutely. Let's just dive right into it. You did a Twitter poll recently, and you basically said, you painted the picture that it's 2026. What's the most exciting area of Bitcoin development? And you had a list of four answers like Lightning, BitVM, Arc, Fedimints, and then CTV, CAT, LNenhance. Maybe can you answer that from your perspective? And maybe also might be worth explaining what some of those even are to some of our listeners.
Yeah, I think I got thinking about it because I think for the Bitcoin, the in-group is kind of going through a shift right now. We've been working on Lightning for, you know, over 6 years or so, which has been the kind of dominant focus of development effort, funding for new startups, and a really healthy thing is happening right now. The conception that hey, a single protocol or a single upgrade is not a silver bullet for all of our woes and issues and challenges with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is an incredible thing in that it has value to many people for many different reasons, which means that the approaches to upgrading Bitcoin or to thinking about how to scale Bitcoin are also going to be varied. But we've really had our eggs all in one basket with Lightning. Fold's been working on it. We were one of the earliest actually put economic use cases on the Lightning network. We went to the initial Lightning conference in Berlin. So I'm a big fan. But the community now, from consumers who use Bitcoin products all the way down to developers who are working on Lightning, are kind of coalescing around this idea that, hey, there are other things that are going on that should receive recognition. And there's, at the very same time that that's happened, and that you can say that not in a heretical, you know, cast you out of the Citadel sense, a lot of very interesting things are being put to the forefront. We have BitVM, which is essentially allows, you know, smart contract computing directly on Bitcoin without any changes to the underlying base layer. So no soft fork required. There's things like Arc, which, you know, enable us an alternative way of scaling, essentially creating mini banks on Bitcoin is from a non-custodial standpoint. And then there's things like CAT, LNenhance, and CTV that also present ways to scale Bitcoin scale UTXOs to more people, amongst a lot of other things. I'm sure even Unchained can see many very relevant use cases on some of those upgrades. Now, Lightning is the only one that exists out of all of those. The other three that I said really don't exist at all. We have very little data on if they will work. Some of them may not work at all. But the interesting thing is we're starting to see mindshare, developer share, and even outside funding start to go into these use cases. And so I was really curious about, you know, where do Bitcoiners think they would be in, you know, two years or so. And it was interesting. I think Lightning came up with over 50% potential share in that. So we're going to still be going deeper on Lightning. I think that makes sense. Lightning is a proven entity. We know the challenges and we know the opportunities. And we're more clear on what exactly it's going to solve for. So it makes sense. So really the question was more about, you know, what are these other things and what promises do we see? And I think there's two things that we're really going to be involved in what is going to win in this thing. And it's not really about winning, but which one is going to receive most shares. You know, there's either which one of these is going to bring more money into Bitcoin and flow more capital into Bitcoin, and which can bring more people into Bitcoin. I think undoubtedly ARK is one that is very directly trying to solve the scaling of UTXOs. And so can we build mini banks on top of Bitcoin in non-custodial ways that do that? I think would help us solve and onboard more people. CTV also helps us scale UTXO management, also some other things. So I think that is also makes sense of scaling more people. And then BitVM also is this thing where if I were to say, hey, all these three things are real and they're all going to work, which is going to be the most talked about? I would have to assume it's going to be BitVM at that point, just because it would essentially swallow all use cases across all the other chains and experimentation that's happening, or essentially make everything a second layer for Bitcoin. So there would be layers for fast, cheap payments. There would be layers for, you know, multi-party custody. There would be layers for Bitcoin banks. And all of these could be spun up very easily, very quickly on top. And so if they were all to fulfill their promise and what they could do, I would have to imagine BitVM would be the top one there, right along with Lightning. But again, none of those exist. So it's all a total guess, which I was reminded by from many people there saying, you know, with Bitcoin, none of these things exist. Lightning exists right in front of us, which is a fair point to take, you know, as well.
Yeah, fascinating. Do you think it's possible that we'll have some sort of scaling solution that we are like not even completely aware of at all today, like something that we can't even comprehend, or it's not compatible, I guess, or can be put in the bucket of any of those, you know, four different solutions that you just brought up?
Yes. I mean, I think the genesis of all of those, at least from as much as I've heard from those that have either written the white paper or developed the original concept, is they were actually trying to solve something within Bitcoin's existing bounds and couldn't. And so they had to, you know, face this moment of, okay, well, we could fork and upgrade Bitcoin, or we're going to have to hack around this. I think ARK and BitVM are both examples of, hey, let's hack around this. Let's not necessarily require soft forks or upgrades. CTV, CAT, all that, of course, are upgrades themselves. And so I think the encouraging thing and the easy yes to your answer is that, you know, these things are just the next wave that are receiving developer share, money, and users going into it, which are going to create new problems. And we're going to find out the limits of their solution. And that's going to beget more and alternative paths and more ideas. And it's really just this branching effect that happens with open source technology, where you get as far as you can, you hit a wall. Some people decide, hey, the answer is to, you know, fork the fundamental thing. Some say it's to route around it. Both of those will create new solutions and opportunities. You know, what they are, can't say, but it is inevitable with open source software.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of promising solutions and things that we can't even comprehend will probably be invented to help Bitcoin scale. Is there like a scenario where a lot of these things don't necessarily work too well and Bitcoin kind of gets caught in a weird part where it doesn't really scale that well and people end up using a lot of custodial solutions? And like, what do you think the probability of something like that would be over, you know, coming decade?
Most of those things either won't work that I said, or will work in a very limited use case. And again, just like we found out with Lightning, it's like it's good for certain things. It's not good for absolutely everything. And as we navigate all of these new ideas that come up and new opportunities, I think it's really important to ground yourself in what actually works today and do everything you can not to sacrifice the wins that we have gotten today, the ground that we have taken. And so I believe we should look at what Bitcoin has won on. I mean, Bitcoin has undoubtedly won at being the best form of money, digital money, certainly, that exists. And anything that is going to put that at risk or potentially put that at risk should go through a lot more trial and tribulation to get any changes there. And so I would say this is why I like things like an Arc or a BidVM. And we don't require us to change anything on the base layer. It doesn't require that. You can just build on top of it. Building on top of it is an inevitability when something is open source. And so as long as we stay true to that, stay true to what Bitcoin has won on, as well as seek, you know, drive these, you know, developer efforts and new ideas down to their, you know, down their path and figure out where they lead us, I think it's smart. But, you know, moving fast and breaking things is not the business that we're all in.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you think that there's some sort of risk when it comes to things like the ETFs where people or investors or holders get complacent and maybe don't strive to be sovereign and use Bitcoin in a non-custodial way? Or do you think that over time there will be like censorship and things that force people to look for true ways to be free with their Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely does. I mean, to the part of your last question I didn't answer of is like, you know, these forces of centralization are so strong within Bitcoin, both from the ETF, even from Lightning. Most people's experience of Lightning is a custodial experience that could be done without Lightning. And that it's a weird pull that we see is that people are seeking the easiest, cheapest experience. And those are often come in custodial forms. You know, non-custodial, choosing to be self-custody and choosing sovereignty is not supposed to be an easy thing, shouldn't be an easy thing. It is a stance of and it's opt-in. It is absolutely of a very intentional move that puts you more at risk from certain things because you have to trust yourself and your setup, but it lowers your risk and need to trust for outside actors. And our entire lives in fiat world is just to trust outside actors to do it for us. And so the model of a custodial model makes perfect sense. It's the dominant way that we have interacted with money for a very long time by design. Bitcoin breaks that fundamentally at the most important thing I believe about Bitcoin is the ability to take self custody of it. And so the ETFs are a danger. And like, I mean, we're looking at the success. I think 500 million inflows almost daily seems to be rising. And that's before most of the marketing has kicked in and some of the, you know, other passive investment that's going to be happening across the traditional financial sector into that ETF. This ship has sailed. And I think it will come down to, you know, an issue. It'll come to a head at some point. The question is, will the builders who are building things for to enable self-custody have built sufficient infrastructure that there is another way, there is another path for Bitcoin? Even in the worst case scenario that you have the ETF swallowing up, you know, 10% of the supply at some point and suggest a fork so that everything is OFAC sanctioned and, you know, is good for the environment. And, you know, I can see that happening. And if we don't have, if we haven't built a compelling alternate infrastructure that would allow people to live on a chain that looks a lot like it does today, we might lose that battle long term. And you know, I think we have a while. Luckily, right now, most people are effectively just cheering for it without much criticism. But I think it does represent a systemic risk that only is going to increase over time.
Yeah, I've heard people talking about like the idea that Wall Street or BlackRock or whoever could theoretically, you know, fork Bitcoin themselves, or another entity could support a fork and create a fork. And then within the ETF parameters, they can kind of select which version of Bitcoin they think is the real Bitcoin, which might end up just rugging a lot of their holders.
Yeah. I mean, everyone would get an airdrop like we did with the Bitcoin Cash. So that's an interesting element. You know, the counterbalance here is that, you know, I like the ETF story. I love what it's doing to Bitcoin. I love the price action. It's bringing a lot of people in. But the stuff I love is the stuff that really represents Bitcoin is for enemies. Like, I love when I see the rumors of UAE stacking, and then we get sovereign nations stacking against each other to have this. Like, that actually strengthens Bitcoin when you have adversarial actors who are vying for ownership over UTXOs. That's a really good thing, because that is going to split any consensus over splitting the chain. The problem is if that doesn't happen in time and this other kind of very centralized entity, which is the ETF, also U.S. government, U.S. government Bitcoin chain. If that gets too far out in front of things, we could have an issue. So the more it can be balanced with these new actors coming in with heavy capital allocations in that are adversarial against it, we shouldn't have a problem. It's if one of these trains develops way too fast that we do. And this is, you know, that's been the case of Bitcoin, you know, from the beginning. You can, you know, Satoshi's emails that just came out from Malmy that, you know, he's really talking about the Wikipedia accepting Bitcoin for WikiLeaks. And he says, it's too early. Don't do this yet. If one of these things goes too far ahead of the other and it's not developing organically in step where the network is maturing at a rate in a balanced rate, like it can cause problems. And, you know, so more stories of, you know, the Emirates coming in, other countries, like that's the good stuff that's happening. It can't just be an ETF that's swallowing it up. We need more competition for swallowing up as much UTXO as possible.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I mean, to some extent, I've heard people talk about this. Like, it's kind of great that the ETF was not approved back in, you know, 2013, 2016 or whatnot. It enabled more coins to get distributed to individuals, countries at this point, corporations, and you know, they're not holding that Bitcoin through the ETF. They're holding it their own UTXO. So it's kind of a weird dynamic where it worked out and better for all of it and better for Bitcoin.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Another question kind of relating to, you know, now that we're in this, you know, early stage of probably, you know, a bull cycle for Bitcoin, typically what happens is, you know, altcoins, you know, we have some crazy phase of everyone investing in dog tokens and the next Bitcoin, right? Will altcoins ever die, or will that be a perpetual phase that we go to?
There are, you know, since the beginning of money, really the idea, you know, I think a lot of Bitcoiners like to understand, you know, Bitcoin as this great purifying technology that brings this idea of all of us becoming, you know, savers and misers and just low time preference over time. Like, I definitely love that vision. But I also believe that human nature is just different than that, because everyone is coming from different, you know, different points of their life. They're inheriting different tools at the beginning of their life, of how they can use them. And really, I do not believe you can separate the idea of money, both good money, both serving saving and speculation. Like, I just don't think you can rid that of it. Those that did not save will be, will increasingly look to speculate. Those that have saved a lot will be looking to speculate and get ahead. Like, it's a cycle that flows together. And I've never bought the idea that we've seen the last, you know, altcoin cycle. I just don't. You know, there's a possibility that it's stamped out of the US, but it will just go abroad. And I don't think you can get rid of it. I think it is here to stay, and digital money makes that easier and easier to do. And it brings down those barriers. So the more wealth in Bitcoin, I believe the more wealth, the more speculation that will happen. And we're seeing that today. And I don't think we will get rid of that. I think we're talking a little bit about the human condition at a certain point.
Yeah. You brought up such an interesting point about how, like, you know, Bitcoiners like to talk about the low time preference, you know, idea of, you know, not speculating and saving. But at the same time, I feel like the world is getting more and more wealthier with new technology, and Bitcoin is like enabling us to save so much more than what was previously possible, that, you know, if you're an extremely wealthy individual, you might actually start speculating more because you have all this wealth and you're comfortable speculating and building new things.
I think that's exactly right. And we've seen this. You know, there's also a popular Bitcoin belief that all altcoin speculation is just like noob guy at McDonald's who's like YOLOing his paycheck into it. Like, if you actually look at where a lot of the speculative capital is coming from in the altcoin markets, a lot of it is from very old Bitcoin OGs who have a ton of Bitcoin. And, you know, their idea, they have more money to, you know, than they need even today at today's prices for the next four generations that they'll have. And a lot of them have actually perpetuated and propelled a lot of this speculative use case. And so it's not always, you know, altcoins leading, you know, lambs to the slaughter. A lot of it is just, you know, early Bitcoin OGs who are going into this fully aware of the speculative risks that are there. And I think that a little bit breaks down that narrative that if only they knew about Bitcoin, they would save in Bitcoin. Well, really, the only two people who are really, you know, degenerating into these altcoins are Bitcoin OGs who have a ton of Bitcoin and are trying to get more Bitcoin, or just trying to get a little bit of dopamine and from their previous, you know, watching Bitcoin hitting that wave. The other is people who felt like they fell behind and didn't catch Bitcoin in time, trying to cheat the system to get a Bitcoin stack. And those are the ones who are obviously, I feel that's the one I think is where the most damage comes from, because what each cycle has shown is that you're never late. You can't be late to Bitcoin because you might not have been in at the, you know, when it was sub a dollar, sort of $100, but you will be farther ahead than you are today by saving in Bitcoin than you would have been doing anything else. And that value proposition alone should be, is incredible to have available to us. Unfortunately, again, the human mind wants to take a shortcut, wants to cheat. And it means instead of saving, you're just going to go full speculation. That's where the dangers happen.
In this frontier moment, Will is suggesting that the extreme speculation may never end and that altcoins may always persist, at least to some extent. Related to this, Tour de Meester recently posted a chart, mostly a fun meme, about how it's possible that altcoins have slowed global Bitcoin adoption, and eventually Bitcoin may get back on track with the growth rate seen in the first couple of cycles before altcoins were popular. Now, this first chart was mostly a meme. He more seriously posted a more sane chart based on a 2012 exponential projection model. The upper bound of this chart sits at over $2 million per Bitcoin by the end of 2025. Of course, this is a stretch and assumes the previous cycle's returns were in fact muted, but it is possible that even the most bullish market participants are underestimating Bitcoin's absolute scarcity. And now back to Will.
But unfortunately, you know, in the fiat world, that's always been there, you know, speculation and trying to get ahead instead of just low time preference. It's a very hard thing. Taking self-custody, very hard thing. Having a low time preference, very hard thing. And again, it's a thing that it's the harder path for someone to take. And that's why, you know, again, we're going to have altcoins and speculation for a long time.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I definitely think it's just very important that we continue educating that, hey, holding or saving Bitcoin is likely the highest long-term risk-adjusted return. And like you said, that's something that's, you know, saving something that's maybe easy to do or simple to do, but it's not easy to do. And then like altcoins play a role in, you know, kind of enticing people away from saving, at least in the short term. Do you think unit bias plays a role in this, you know, gambling on altcoins rather than encouraging you to save Bitcoin? How do you think about unit bias?
Yeah, we know unit bias has an effect. You know, that one of the things that Fold did very early is we just adopted, I don't think anywhere do we show, you know, when you're buying Bitcoin or when you're earning it, we only show the unit in sats. We only show it. So, you know, I have, you know, earned 48 million sats on my Fold rewards. When you buy Bitcoin, you also buy sats. There's a thing that just, again, our monkey brains like larger numbers. And they like when those larger numbers equate to a smaller entry price to get those larger numbers. And so we know it's true. How much that really comes into effect when you're trying to make the case of, hey, stop buying this altcoin versus, you know, this sat is a harder argument. But at the end of the day, what it does solve for is someone who's ready for Bitcoin, I think, is more readily available to buy in sats. When they're ready for that, they feel more accomplished. They feel like they make more progress when you talk from that unit. But I don't think it's just going to magically make people think, oh, I can have 48 million sats or 48 million dog with hats. You know, I'm going to go to a dog with hat because I'm going to expect, you know, 1,000x return in a week, and then I'll get out and then I'll buy Bitcoin with it. Like, that's the psychology you're dealing with the altcoin space.
Yep. Have you noticed a difference in like Fold clients, like their relationship with sats or Bitcoin that they've earned as like a reward versus maybe sats or Bitcoin that they've purchased or purchased on an exchange? Like, do people like treat them differently at all? Like, are they more inclined to save or something, or have you done any like
analysis? Yeah, I mean, some, we've done some quantitative research around it, but the qualitative is just so clear. We get it so often that there is definitely a difference when people are buying on our platform. It's definitely heading to cold storage, and it is your savings account. We often hear that the rewards with that they're earning with Fold are the rewards that they're most likely going to do something with it. So the most common things are, hey, all the rewards I earn on Fold goes to my kids' Bitcoin stash. That'll be part of their inheritance. We hear it is the sats I earn on Fold is what I use on Noster, or I use on Wavelake, or I, you know, spend on a gift card, something like that. So we see the rewards. And again, part of what that Fold's whole thing is like trying to make, a pathway into Bitcoin to earn it easy, but also once you're earning it passively. And so I think just from that frame and that mindset that these sats are free, to some extent puts them in a different mental category than sats that, you know, you may be putting your whole paycheck into for your own savings stack. So we see it often that people have a lot of creative ways and are far more free to do with those sats than maybe ones that they buy from an exchange.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. And I guess it does make sense because it's like, it's kind of this passive sats flow that you're receiving by just swiping your Fold card every time you check out somewhere. So pretty interesting. Do you think that like, that's good for Bitcoin, like where people have, you know, a couple million sats that they've earned through their Fold card or more, and people do, you know, unique things with those, whether it's like zapping people on Noster or doing all sorts of different, you know, micropayment type things. Is that good for Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the more Bitcoin flows is the better. I think just again, sats flow from the standpoint of just the whole ecosystem. You know, the more places where Bitcoin is flowing from and more use cases is good. Now, it's undoubtedly one of the smallest flows happening in Bitcoin. Like, you know, if you really want to talk about the biggest flows are, you know, number one, ETF happening. Then you have the kind of Sailor corporate treasury, arbitrage. Then you have just investors who are using it as a savings vehicle or an investment vehicle, depending on where they are in their journey. And then you have all these longer tail cases, medium of exchange, peer-to-peer transfers. They're ultimately very small. And if any one of these went away, it's not going to, Bitcoin would just continue forward, really. But I just see those as really at the beginning of their adoption cycle. It's just, there's no doubt that the idea of Bitcoin as a store of value is the number one killer use case of Bitcoin right now. And the other forms will develop. They will get bigger. Right now, they're very small. And so everything that does, you know, at once, you know, these things will start to build. But, you know, for the foreseeable future, they'll be very small. And I think we need that culture, both of people building and using and being creative, to ultimately get to a spot where these, you know, these sat flows get larger and more meaningful.
Yeah. On the topic of flows of Bitcoin, like I have the HODL waves chart behind me right here, and it's, you can definitely see a very clear trend that most Bitcoin is just getting kind of held and not moved over, you know, longer and longer time goes by. Do you think that trend will continue for like a very, very, very long time, or if not, never stop? And maybe like there's a small fraction of Bitcoin that we use as like a medium of exchange or for rewards. And that might be a lot of activity, but it might be a very small amount of the total circulating Bitcoin.
Yes. I mean, that's definitely what's going to happen. I think it's a 90%+ of Bitcoin will probably just not move anywhere. The top crust of that's flowing around, you know, is, you know, from things like smaller peer-to-peer transfers, but it's also just moving UTXO ownership across to different entities. That 10%, though, is going to be worth a lot more than it is today, right? That entire 10% is going to be settling you know, the market cap, the entire market cap of Bitcoin today will be settled in that top 10% in the next coming years, right? So it will be a small percent of Bitcoins, but it will be a large, you know, it'll be a large market cap that is going to be flowing. A lot of value will have been settled. So yes, I think that's definitely the case. And there's also ways of how do you transfer ownership of UTXOs without actually sending the UTXO. Like, you know, an open dime is a great example. I can use an open dime and give you $1 million of Bitcoin. That doesn't move on chain at all, but the value between us has transferred. And there will be things like that happen that all are essentially allowing Bitcoin to flow without having an on-chain footprint, because it's going to get very, very expensive. And the base layer is essentially just going to be, you know, the old container ship analogy versus, you know, your post service delivering value to you.
With tax day on April 15th, high net worth Bitcoin holders could be leaving a lot of money on the table if they don't have a sound financial plan and tax strategy. Sound Advisory is a leading financial advisory firm for long-term Bitcoin holders like yourself. They can help you maximize your Bitcoin wealth while navigating the complexities of the legacy financial system. Don't get killed on taxes. Check out Sound Advisory at thesoundadvisory.com for more information. That's thesoundadvisory.com. Now back to the show. Yeah, I guess it's almost like those scaling solutions that we were talking about are going to make Bitcoin move less, because that's kind of what it is. It's delaying the on-chain transaction that might be needed.
All of them. Arc, BitVM, all of them just delay on-chain movement. And so it's totally inevitable. It does get to the case of why, you know, all this, you know, as number goes up now, it's funny how we're in bear markets and in bull markets, you know, bear markets, you know, we're all about the tech, you know, number go up is less important. But, you know, at the end of the day, number has to go up constantly. It has to go up, or, you know, the experiment gets way out of balance, and it will fail. And so as we talk about the sustainability of Bitcoin's chain and how do we have much more transaction fees, you know, first step is number's got to continue going up. Number one, bare minimum. The second thing is, okay, how do we make sure there's a healthy exchange of UTXOs to continue to paying miners to solve the security budget? So
yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, you know, over the next decade or even century. What do you think about fiat payment companies? Like, you obviously have a Fold, which is like a Bitcoin rewards app, and now you have buying and selling Bitcoin on that as well. How do you think about fiat payment companies? Like, will Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, will they always exist, or are those going to be, you know, dinosaurs of the past?
You know, some of them will be far too slow to adopt and get ahead of the curve. But they do have real network effects. And those, the difference is those that are just middlemen because of a regulatory moat that don't actually add value are going to get demolished in the process. But those that actually have a network effect, and I think Visa is definitely one of them, Stripe is definitely one of them, while adding Bitcoin can seem to undermine some of their other business models, they can also use their moat to great value to integrate Bitcoin as well. And I think that's going to happen. You're already seeing some of these companies, all, you know, aggressively start to pursue their Bitcoin strategy. And again, this Bitcoin strategy is going to be everything from hold it on your balance sheet. How do we leverage our existing, you know, products and value set to augment Bitcoin and vice versa? And so some of them will be disrupted, but a lot of them are going to have their hand forced and will adopt. Now, some Bitcoin companies are definitely going to make it as well. But those that truly get thrown out are the ones who just operate a business that are just a middleman without, you don't own the network, you don't own the customer relationship, literally some regulator created your industry and, you know, that's where you collect your check from. Those will go away. But if you own the network or you own the customer, you'll stay around and, you know, probably be just fine for a while.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is kind of a deeper, like, interesting question. Like, do you envision the concept of payments evolving at all over time? Like, I think that, you know, Fold Rewards is kind of a good example where maybe 100 years ago, you couldn't even comprehend, you know, getting rewards back for sending money. I don't know if that existed 100 years ago. Are there other like concepts like that that may, you know, be very popular, you know, sometime down the road that aren't thinking about today?
Well, I think Bitcoin's original Silk Road thesis of unstoppable payments is extremely powerful and definitely checks that one of those boxes of something amazing where, you know, I don't have to actually go and meet you with physical cash or gold to make a payment someone doesn't want me to do. Now they'll know that I did it, right? Because Bitcoin is not a great place to obfuscate your activity, but they can't stop you from doing it.
In this frontier moment, Will is talking about Bitcoin as technology that enables truly unstoppable payments. Here's a brief analogy to understand how this compares to the traditional banking system. Imagine a game of whack-a-mole where the goal is to hit moles with a mallet as they pop up from holes in a large board. In this analogy, the moles represent Bitcoin transactions, and the game board represents the global network of full nodes and miners. When you make a traditional bank transfer, it's like sending a mole just through one specific hole. If someone wants to stop that mole or payment, they can simply cover that hole and the mole won't be able to get through. However, with Bitcoin, your transaction isn't going through just one hole. It's like sending hundreds of moles through hundreds of holes all at once, all across the entire board. This board is vast and spanning the entire globe, and it is maintained by thousands of independent participants running Bitcoin full nodes. Trying to stop a Bitcoin transaction would be like trying to predict and cover every possible hole from which a mole might pop up, which is practically impossible given the number of holes and the fact that more holes can join the network and the speed at which the moles move to the available open holes. This is a key reason why it's easy to censor centralized fiat payments or censor centralized TikTok videos, but it's incredibly difficult to censor Bitcoin transactions. And now back to Will.
That's a huge win. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm not sure what the future of that is really, you know, because of, you know, Bitcoin's, you know, privacy, existing privacy and where it is. I don't know where it is, but that truly did something very special and new. Payments in general are trending towards all of the infrastructure that we have for payments versus the actual experience of payments. So today you can experience 24/7 payments, instantaneous access to your money, but the actual infrastructure that's supporting that does none of that. It doesn't settle your payment. It does not open 24/7. It doesn't do anything. All we've done is create a whole layer of fraud mitigation, of capital risk, of insurance, of borrowing and loans to make that upper crust experience real. And we actually have a technology today that can provide some of those guarantees 24/7, irreversible, instantly settled or close to instant settlement without all of that underlying infrastructure. So I think payments is really just going to get streamlined in a lot of ways. We'll have sending value over Bitcoin, whether that is Bitcoin or a dollar over Bitcoin, will upgrade fiat in a funny way, and so that will change. Things like rewards and all of that, it's remains to be seen. A lot of technically rewards and where rewards are today is a lot of that is just what's happening in Washington. What's the next bill that comes out to regulate these payment companies? So those are all just represent massive risks for payment networks overall. And it's a good example of traditional company creating a regulatory moat around itself to stop competition from coming in. Now is finds that regulatory moat as a regulatory jail cell where they can't get out of it. And Bitcoin is an escape hatch out of it. And so we'll see. Remains to be seen how much of it is adopted, but a lot of good Bitcoin companies are pushing the envelope anyway. So if they don't, we will.
Love to hear it. Where do you see Fold 5 years from now?
So Fold has always been about introducing and shepherding in a new generation of financial actors into Bitcoin, into their daily life. Like how it's not about how can Bitcoin benefit you in 20 years or for your retirement fund. It's like today, how is it going to do it? We started off with rewards, and what that's done is, people will look at their rewards after 2 years and say, I have more money in my rewards account than I do in my savings account. How is that possible? Why is that real? Well, let's talk about how Bitcoin works and what it's doing. It also has given people, you know, increased purchasing power. So as you have a Bitcoin spike, now it's easier to maybe buy groceries than it was without it. We're also seeing now people adopt Bitcoin as their investment account into their savings account. And not only now their savings account, into their checking and savings. So people aren't looking at it just as a thing to put away forever and never touch. It's saying, hey, I have my stack that I put away and never touch. But why does it make sense for me on a day-to-day basis to have any meaningful exposure to US dollars at all, which are being inflated away, which are exposed to custody risk? And I should just have that in Bitcoin. And when I need it, I can convert out of Bitcoin. And I've had users who have joined us 3 years ago who said, hey, a friend just said, you know, I should get into Bitcoin. So I'm going to start just earning rewards. And now some of those people have gone from earning rewards to start investing in Bitcoin as a kind of their own speculative investment, then started saving in Bitcoin, replaced their savings account, and are now actually living entirely off Bitcoin. So Fold is building the scaffolding for the rabbit hole as time goes on, and as everyday consumers and financial actors are maturing into Bitcoin's, you know, true potential. And so what do I see where Fold is in 5-10 years? It is definitely the center of your financial universe built on Bitcoin. It is from your rewards down to your checking and savings and all the other things that the Bitcoin economy can do. You know, you should be able to access credit and loan off of that Bitcoin. You should be able to get a mortgage off of that Bitcoin. You should be able to send to friends. All those things will be present and integrated into Fold. So you can essentially ditch your bank and go almost to a full Bitcoin bank stack with Fold.
Awesome. Yeah, that is very cool. One thing that I think is interesting is, I think last week on Friday, I posted a tweet and I said, I'm talking with Will on Tuesday. And you guys have any questions for him? And a ton of people replied with questions, and they were all questions about Fold, pretty much. Why do you think so many people are so passionate and excited about Fold?
I think it's because we built something to be relevant every single day in people's lives. So they think about it, which makes them both excited and it's on their mind, and also very open to sharing the shortcomings and the challenges or the things they wished came from Fold. And that is essentially the success of what we've tried to do, is create something that people engage with every day, deepening their relationship with Bitcoin, that they think about all the time. And the only limiting factor is that Fold doesn't offer it, and we need to offer it. And so, you know, that's why every time, you know, I constantly am asking our user base, what would you like to see? What's next? And none of it is long, far off speculative things. It's like, I need this today because this unlocks the next, chapter of Bitcoin in my life. And I need that from Fold. And I've expected Fold to give that to me. And I think that is probably why, when you ask what is going to look a lot like our support inbox does, I'll probably say that.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, since people did ask, I kind of want to ask at least a few of them. And you may have very short answers, which is fine, or say it's coming at some point. But I kind of want to just rattle them off. And if you have a quick answer, feel free to answer it. Someone asked, when Fold credit card?
Yes, the elusive Fold credit card. It's something that we've been working on and have been talking about for a while, because I think it's something that the market wants and will be very successful. So we still believe that is the right path. We think about credit in different ways. We think about, hey, the Bitcoin you've purchased on Fold, the Bitcoin you deposit on Fold, you should get access to credit and loan lines directly from that. You could push that directly to your debit card, or you could ACH that to a different bank. So we think about credit that way. We also think about a more traditional revolving credit product. And probably the most clear thing, which is not clear at all, but it is on the roadmap. We do feel that is a product that Fold should launch and will launch.
Cool. Another one is, when will there be a feature to automatically push a Bitcoin balance that you might have to cold storage?
Yes. So right now you can withdraw. So with Fold, when you buy Bitcoin, you immediately get access to that Bitcoin. There's no waiting time or anything. So you can instantly withdraw that to cold storage. I think what this person may be asking is like, can I upload an XPub for my Unchained vault or something? I think that's a good thing for probably you and I to discuss after this call. But right now you can technically do that. It's just not automated. I think that's a solid feature though.
Another one is Fold going to do anything about the death of PayPal bills?
Oh, PayPal. It was the hack of the century, and both the one of the most exciting things and most annoying things of my last year. So anytime, you know, you find something like this, essentially what it was is Fold users can earn rewards for paying using their debit card to pay off mortgages, credit cards, insurance, you name it. So essentially all the largest bills that you have, you could earn rewards on, which is very lucrative for a lot of people. Recently, PayPal has been removing some of these billers, which has left some people unable to earn rewards and left them obviously unhappy with that. So we're talking with PayPal. We're seeing where they're at. We honestly don't know if this is a long-term thing or they're just switching providers and they're going to bring it back. I hope they're going to bring it back because, you know, I certainly benefited off of it. But even if they don't, I think we have a lot of exciting new rewards opportunities that are coming. But good thing to all those who are able to take advantage of, you know, earning rewards on your mortgage, which I'm still able to do somehow. So those bills are still there. Was truly amazing.
Yeah, I was paying off my like Citi credit card through Fold for a number of months, and it was definitely awesome. So hopefully it'll somehow come back. PayPal will allow it. But how about when Lightning withdraws from a Fold account? That's another one.
Yes, I think that's an obvious one that we should have. And really from us, it's just been making sure that we have our custody and all of that infrastructure really ready to go, because it doesn't make sense for us to have Lightning withdrawals for your rewards, but not for the Bitcoin that you buy. We want to roll out something that's comprehensive that works for all use cases. And I think we're now close after the work that we've been doing the last 3 months. To upgrade our custody, and also with that, our ways of moving Bitcoin around on the platform.
I love it. Yeah, Fold is definitely one of my favorite Bitcoin products, and I feel like it's only going to get better, especially after listening to you chat about this. Is there anything else that you want to bring up or mention or closing thoughts?
Let's see. I think Fold, so, you know, the things that are on the horizon for Fold, you know, are, you know, again, how do we make it relevant for your entire life? So we're doing joint accounts. That allows you to get your spouse, your family on board to start stacking with you. You'll see a lot of effort and things on the Bitcoin buying side. You know, we just released the ability to round up your change into Bitcoin. So, you know, if you spend $175, it'll automatically buy 25 cents worth of Bitcoin. The fun part about Fold is that you can actually put a multiplier on it and do 10x. So if you save 25 cents into Bitcoin, that'll be $250 into Bitcoin. So you can kind of boost your stacking. We have DCA, recurring buys, a lot of good stuff coming down the line. I think this will be one of Fold's most productive years. So I'd say definitely try it out. And I'm always available on Twitter anyway. So you can, like all our other community does, is, you know, constantly talk about what Fold should have. And we'll get there someday.
I like it a lot. Well, Will, thanks for taking the time to sit down with us, and it was great to chat.
Awesome, Joe. Likewise.